In a world that celebrates tech visionaries like Jobs and Gates, Gordon Moore stands as the unsung architect of our digital age. His deceptively simple observation that computing power would double roughly every 2 years while costs decreased has proven remarkably accurate for over half a century. This principle, now known as Moore's Law, isn't just some obscure technical detail. It's what Warren Buffett calls the organizing principle of the technological revolution. Without it, venture capitalist Marc Andreessen notes, none of the internet would have happened. Yet Moore himself remains largely unknown to the public, a soft-spoken chemist who transformed humanity's relationship with technology through methodical analysis rather than charismatic showmanship. His story reveals how profound impact often comes not from dramatic disruption, but from quiet persistence and clear-eyed foresight. Born in Pescadero, California, in 1929, as the Great Depression began, Gordon Moore inherited his pioneer ancestors' self-reliance. His chemistry fascination began at age 11 when a neighbor's chemistry set sparked his imagination. He transformed his family's garage shed into a laboratory, with his permissive parents simply advising him to be careful despite occasional dangerous experiments. This passion carried Moore through San Jose State to UC Berkeley, where he thrived among scientific luminaries. In Nobel laureate William Giok's graduate-level thermodynamics course, he scored 0 on the midterm, but rebounded to achieve the second-highest grade on the final, showcasing his determination and analytical abilities. At Caltech, Moore completed his PhD in under 3 years, modifying lab equipment and gaining his first exposure to semiconductors. When academia proved unreceptive, fate intervened in February 1956 with a call from William Shockley, co-inventor of the transistor and future Nobel Prize winner. Shockley was recruiting brilliant minds for his new semiconductor venture in Mountain View, and Moore had caught his attention. Moore's tenure with Shockley lasted just 18 months. Despite primitive laboratory conditions, comparable to alchemists' laboratories, Moore's chemistry background proved invaluable as he built better furnaces essential for transistor production. However, Shockley's erratic management style became unbearable. In May 1957, Moore and 7 colleagues, dubbed the Traitorous 8, left to form their own company. With investment banker Arthur Rock's help, they secured backing from Sherman Fairchild to create Fairchild Semiconductor Corporation. Their timing coincided with the Soviet Union's Sputnik launch, creating a boom within a boom for American technology. At Fairchild, Moore built diffusion furnaces and developed critical manufacturing procedures. Their first breakthrough came with an IBM order for 100 Mesa transistors at $150 each. As the company grew, Moore's colleague Gene Horney developed the revolutionary planar process for fabricating transistors. That same year, Robert Noyce conceived the integrated circuit or microchip, multiple transistors on a single silicon wafer with interconnections atop an insulating oxide layer. By 1962, observing remarkable manufacturing improvements, Moore mathematically demonstrated in microelectronics how microchips would slash electronics costs while enabling unprecedented capabilities. In April 1965, his landmark article, Cramming More Components Onto Integrated Circuits, made a bold prediction. The number of components on integrated circuits would double annually for at least a decade. Moore envisioned home computers, automatic controls for automobiles, and personal portable communications equipment, concepts that seemed fantastical then but are commonplace today. This observation that transistor density would double approximately every 18 to 24 months while costs decreased became known as Moore's Law. Not a natural law, but a social one. It was realized through coordinated global industry efforts and massive investment. The result? Computing costs have plummeted more than a millionfold, while electronics components have become over a billionfold cheaper. Despite his visionary publication, Moore grew frustrated with Fairchild's internal divisions. When colleague Robert Noyce proposed starting a new company focused on semiconductor memory chips, Moore initially declined, saying, "I've got the best job in the industry." But as Fairchild deteriorated, he reconsidered, telling Noyce, "Okay, I'll go too." Moore and Noyce launched Intel with a strategy based on Fairchild lessons. Rather than competing in established markets, they would create new ones with advanced memory microchips, standardized products with broad appeal, unlike custom logic chips. Intel's first major success came with the 1103 DRAM chip, which became the industry's best-selling microchip by 1972. An unexpected opportunity arose when Japanese calculator manufacturer Busicom requested custom chips. Intel engineer Ted Hoff proposed a revolutionary solution, creating a general-purpose programmable chip instead. With Moore's support, this became the 4004 microprocessor, the first computer on a chip. The turning point came in 1981 when IBM selected Intel's 808 for its first personal computer. Moore insisted on pricing the chip at just $10 despite $20 manufacturing costs, helping establish the Wintel partnership that would dominate computing for decades. By 1980, Moore grew concerned about Japanese competition dominating the memory chip market. Japanese manufacturers had caught up with Intel by following Moore's law while focusing on quality manufacturing rather than innovation. Despite IBM support, Intel's 256K DRAM failed dramatically, capturing just 0.1% of the world market by 1985. Moore faced a critical decision about investing $400 million in new fabrication plants for next-generation memory chips. In the pivotal revolving door moment, Moore asked himself, "If you were coming in from outside to run the company, would you stay in DRAMs?" His answer was clear: no. This led to Intel's most significant strategic shift, abandoning the memory market that had been Intel's first success and redirecting resources to microprocessors. Moore refocused his team on putting the powerful 32-bit 8038 processor on advanced manufacturing technology. Moore also approved another bold move, making Intel the sole manufacturer of the 386 processor. The gamble was enormous. If customers rejected a sole-source chip, Intel might fail. But if they accepted it, Intel would control pricing and profits for the heart of the PC revolution. Gordon Moore's strategic gamble paid off spectacularly. After Intel's first public loss in 1986, his decisions to exit DRAM, invest in advanced manufacturing, and sole source the 386 microprofits delivered record profits in 1987. The Wintel partnership with Microsoft dominated the PC industry, with Intel controlling over 80% of PC microprocessors by the mid-1990s. After retirement, Gordon established the Moore Foundation with Betty in 2000, endowing it with $5 billion focused on environmental conservation, scientific research, and higher education. By 2015, Moore's law faced physical limits as transistors approached atomic scale. Moore himself acknowledged, "All good exponentials come to an end." Yet his observation created a certainty about progress that has driven the digital revolution for over half a century. Despite his extraordinary impact, Gordon remained unaffected by fame and fortune, described by colleagues as a remarkably non-greedy person who maintained frugal habits despite his wealth. In a world defined by the exponential growth he identified, Moore represents something timeless. A visionary whose methodical analysis and commitment to excellence created the foundation for our digital world. His legacy shows that profound revolutions often come not from dramatic disruption, but from clear-eyed foresight and patience.